Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. We're also brought to you by Houseboats.com, your home for houseboat rentals on Shasta Lake. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Giants with Bruce McGowan from KCBS in San Francisco. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Bruce McGowan covered sports in the Bay Area at KMBR for 17 years. Now he's at KCBS Radio in San Francisco. On Friday, I had a chance to catch up with him and talk about the Giants and a little about the San Jose Sharks. Well, Bruce, this is a great time to be a Bay Area sports fan. I mean, we're doing this Giants podcast here, but, you know, the Warriors are starting their playoff run, hopefully a long run. And the same with the Sharks. And you're actually heading down to San Jose as we speak to cover game two of the Sharks series with Las Vegas. So, you know, as a fan of Bay Area sports, this is probably the best time of the year with everything that's going on, isn't it?
It really is. It's a lot of fun. I think, you know, Sharks fans are especially excited. And, you know, it is kind of a cult following. Hockey is different than the other sports. You go to places like Denver or Minneapolis or Boston or Toronto where hockey is a way of life. It's not that way here. But the fans that support this team are very knowledgeable, very passionate. And when you walk into that arena, Joe, you can feel the electricity. It is palpable. It's a fun series, too, because they're playing a Vegas team that is very much a rival. There's a lot of you know, physical, like, I guess I like to use that term, chippy play on the ice, or was at least in game one. So we're anticipating the same thing tonight. And the Sharks are playing a lot better than they were late in the year. Both teams really stumbled into the postseason having some problems. The Sharks seem to have rectified their problem. They got outstanding defenseman Erik Karlsson back. There were some concerns about their goalie, Martin Jones. He looked pretty good the other night. Of course, they did keep the pressure off him. But it should be a fun game tonight. And if the Sharks can go up 2-0, they'll be in pretty good shape.
All right, so there's electricity down there in San Jose. Same thing at Oracle Arena. But at Oracle Park, the crowds are down. The attendance is not what it once was, of course, you know, after some down years. And then really not a lot of optimism for this team. What did you think about, A, the offseason, you know, and what Farhan did or didn't do? And what's going on? Do you think that maybe there could be some optimism, especially with some of the recent moves? I mean, getting Kevin Pillar, who had 11 RBIs in that series against the Padres, you know, just an amazing, I think it was 9 RBIs, actually, in 3 games. And, you know, bringing Tyler Austin in with the power potential that he has.
Well, to be honest with you, I was a little surprised. I mean, had 2 bad years in a row and not a lot of movement in the offseason. Most people felt this team was not going to be very good and pretty much lived up to those expectations. I thought with all the injuries they had and the inconsistent play and the lack of hitting, you know, a number of guys were worn down last year. Longoria didn't have a full year. Crawford was worn down. Belt didn't play a lot of games because he was hurt off and on. Joe Panik missed a substantial part of the season. Buster Posey was not in good shape. I thought they'd be much better this year, and they still may get their hitting together, but right now, collectively, they're hitting right around the Mendoza line, which is not to get you very far. You know, they won a game last night, 1-0, but you can't win every game 2-1 or 3-2. They've got to have a little more support. I like their pitching. Jeff Samardzija looked very good the other night against the Rockies with 7 strikeouts and 7 innings. And this kid, Derek Rodriguez, is very mature and very savvy and confident. Of course, his dad was a Hall of Famer, but he's pitched very well. And Madison Bumgarner, you know, still, all the things you say about him being past his prime, he's never had a problem with his arm. So, you know, the bullpen is solid. The defense is good. I just don't think they made enough moves to strengthen the offense. And now they've sort of been, you know, patching things together. This is a year of transition, and it's an unfortunate year because of all the offseason deaths of the icons, such as Willie McCovey and Hank Greenwald and Frank Robinson and Peter McGowan and now Alan Beyer, one of their principal owners died the other day. It's been a rough year for the Giants. So, Giants fans, you know, the Bay Area, you have to win, Joe, and they're not winning right now.
We'll have more with Bruce McGowan right after this.
If you're thinking about a fun vacation, how about renting a houseboat on beautiful Shasta Lake? That's right, just go to houseboats.com, where they offer houseboat vacations on Shasta Lake. They also rent cabins as well as wakeboard, day cruising, fishing, pontoon, and party boats. Food and beverage service, fueling, brand name clothing, souvenirs, and a grocery store are all available at their modern marinas. Jones Valley Resort and Silverthorn Resort are the premier boating destinations on Shasta Lake, and houseboats.com will set you up there. Houseboats.com has the best service, the best boats, and the best locations. Call 877-468-7326 or go to houseboats.com today.
I wanted to talk to you about some of those people who passed away that you mentioned. I mean, let's start with the Hall of Famer, Willie McCovey, the gentle giant, you know, over 500 home runs. And, you know, I always think back to just great memories of watching him hit some big home runs in the 80s and how the fans really adored him. And he was so attached to the Giants, you know, all the way to the end of his life. He would come to all the games, as many as he could, even when he wasn't feeling great. He always seemed to be out there at then AT&T Park. What were your dealings with Willie McCovey? And I'm sure that you miss him already this year.
Yeah, I got to know Willie pretty well. And I used to spend time visiting him up at his booth. I'd come by. I'd try to be as innocuous as possible and just come by for a few minutes before the game and pat him on the back and ask him how he was doing. And we'd talk about, you know, the young players. He loved talking baseball. And as you mentioned, he was a gentle giant, very quiet, soft-spoken, modest. You know, what you saw is what you got. Completely the opposite of so many of the guys today that are the big-name stars. You know, Willie was never the kind of a person who was wowed by all of the glitz and the glamour. He just wanted to play baseball. And, you know, just for lack of a better term, just a lovely person, wonderful person. And I think that's why the fans clung on to him so much. They clung to him because he was a part of the franchise for 22 years. And you mentioned some of the electric moments. I mean, you know, he authored some big home runs. I remember 1969. He was the most dominant slugger in the game. And I remember the Cincinnati Reds did something very radical. They did a shift where they put three infielders to the right of second and four guys in the outfield, and he still hit the ball over the fence. So they were the first team to do something kind of to try to negate his power. It didn't work too well. But we won't see the likes of a guy like him again. And we should. I mean, people like that, everybody's unique. Everybody has their own little style. But Willie, you know, he is going to just that swing alone, the way he just uncoiled, you know, it was a thing of beauty to watch. And it's tough to see him go, but he was fading down the stretch. You could see, you know, nature wasn't kind to him. He had some health issues, and it, unfortunately, you know, it finally caught up with him. But he lived a good life. 80 years is not bad for a guy that played in the major league. So we will have nothing but good things to say and good memories about Willie.
That's funny that what you mentioned about the shift, because it's so commonplace now, and a lot of hitters have a tough time figuring it out. You know, for Willie, it was just simple. Just hit the ball over the fence, and Barry Bonds has even said that, where, you know, hey, if they put the shift on me, I'm just going to hit it over the wall. But it's not that easy for just the regular hitter, right?
It's just a different era. It is. It's and McCovey was around during an exciting time. I remember Willie told me a story. Years ago, I was on the road with the Giants, and they were playing in Arizona, and it was the weekend Ted Williams died, and Willie and Ted Williams, Willie's rookie year was Ted's second to last year in the majors, and Ted was with the Red Sox at spring training in Arizona, and he had been studying Willie and knew about him, and Willie said he was amazed how much he knew about him, and Willie hadn't even played a game in the major leagues, and Ted kind of took him under his wing, and Willie said he learned a lot about the game, a lot about hitting, just from listening and hanging around Ted Williams. And so I was really lucky to, you know, to get McCovey at that particular time. And an interesting little sidelight, those two guys ended up with the same number of career homers. I think it was 521. And they were both left-handed hitters. And so, you know, it's amazing how all these little connections, you know, we meet people and they know somebody. And I had no idea when I made the phone call to him to try to get him to talk about Ted Williams that he had that connection with Ted. But he was very close to Ted Williams, and they stayed in touch right up until the day Ted died, which was really kind of poignant. Willie was that kind of a guy, though. He was somebody that was completely unaffected by all of the celebrity, you know, that kind of cloaks an individual. He never let it get to him. He never let it bother him. He never let it become an issue. He was just a regular, down-to-earth guy. And it was a lot of fun getting to know him. He was a pleasure.
Yeah, so he's dearly missed. There's no doubt about that. And Hank Greenwald, I mean, there's somebody that, for me, growing up, listening to him, the game was just always on for me in the background or in the car, and just that voice was synonymous with the Giants. He had such a passion for the game of baseball and baseball broadcasting. I mean, he really worked at his craft, and for Hank Greenwald passing away, a lot of the newer Giants fans, they may not know about Hank Greenwald. What are your memories of him?
Well, one thing that he told me that I thought really struck home was he said, every game is a special event, and every game has a story. And you don't know what's going to happen. Who are the heroes? Who are going to be the goats? As the game unfolds, the story begins to unfold. And at the end of the day, you have this wonderful, complete experience. You can summarize it all by looking at your score sheet. That's the beautiful thing about baseball. If you keep score, that's one of the reasons I've always kept score, because I love looking back and I remember, a certain pitch or a certain play. I might put a little exclamation point next to a great catch. And Hank says he does this, or said he did the same thing. He would always write down little notes next to the at-bats. He always tried to weave in stories. Hank broadcast for some really bad teams. And when you're broadcasting for a bad team, as I'm sure you know, Joe, because you've done minor league baseball, you've got to keep the fans' interest. And to keep their interest, you've got to come up with some interesting stories and little nuggets of wisdom or humor. And Hank was so good at that. He had a lot of that at the ready. He didn't have to, have a reference book or a lot of notes nearby. It was all in his head, which always amazed me. I mean, he was one of those kind of nerdy kids probably who studied the baseball record book or just read a lot of books about baseball. And he knew things about, Hank Greenberg or, Carl Hubble. I mean, he could pull names. You could throw a name out from an earlier era, and Hank would have a wonderful little story or anecdote to tell about that. How many broadcasters do that today? Most of the guys, they throw out all these statistics, and after a while you become kind of, it almost goes over your head. I'd like to hear more stories. I think that's what's missing in radio today, are the stories, because that humanizes the game, and that also allows the audience to feel like they're a part of it. When you just throw out statistics all the time, statistics have a place, but when you just deal with that alone, or that's the majority of the time you're talking in between pitches, it becomes kind of cut and dry, and it doesn't have, I don't know. And I guess I'm just an old fuddy-duddy, that's the way I was brought up, listening to Russ Hodges and Lon Simmons and later Bill King.
Well, I totally agree with you there. And it's funny that you brought that up about Hank, because I'll tell a quick story. He was in Rochester doing a book signing because he's from Rochester. And, of course, I was the broadcaster there for 6 years. And he gave me a great lesson on exactly what you just talked about. At the time, the Rochester Red Wings were something like 20 or 25 games out of first place in the middle of the summer. And he told me, he said, Joe, he goes, don't worry about it. I know you're a little discouraged about the performance of the team. But he said, just take every game and realize that there are people listening to what you have to bring to the table. So you have to entertain them and come to the table with something every game, and that's going to make it better. And you know what? I took his advice. It was great advice, and it really kind of changed everything for me, because you're not always going to have a good team. And, that seems to be really part of the appeal of Hank Greenwald, because there were a lot of, seasons where the Giants weren't having a great year. It wasn't just about the 1989 World Series team when Hank was the broadcaster.
Yeah, and I think that still today there's a place for that, especially with baseball, with the long intervals between pitches in the game sometimes that are one-sided. It lends itself to not only storytelling, but to flesh out the personality of the broadcaster. You can't do that with the other sports because the action is nonstop. And if you did that, you'd do it at the expense of telling the listener what is going on. With baseball, you could weave those little stories in and out of the action, and they don't detract from it. They enhance it. And I think that's one of the beauties of a guy like Hank Greenwald. He was able to do that and do it so skillfully and in such an informal, kind of a friendly manner. You almost felt like, I think with any of the great broadcasters, you almost feel like they're sitting in the room with you. Vin Scully always used to say, pull up a chair. And that's I think, that's what the broadcaster wants to do. They want you to feel. Bill King once told me, And this was before he was doing baseball, but he what he said, I think, really hit home. He said, you know, I picture a listener, an individual listener, whether it's, you know, they're listening in a car or at home on the radio, but my goal is to tie their stomach a little tighter into the knot with my description. If I can do that, he says, I have a day's satisfaction. Now, that is a little more in keeping with the game of football and basketball, because they are, you know, they're maybe a little more fast-paced, a little more action-packed, but it's the same idea. You know, you've got to keep people's interest, and being just strictly entertaining is one thing, but if you can entertain by telling stories and humanizing it and getting down to the level where people feel like you're having a conversation with them, which, Joe, I hate to say it, I think that is one of the big problems with our world today, is we don't have these casual conversations about stories, and people are just starving for that. And baseball broadcasters, the good ones, still are able to tap into that. I think Hank was just, you know, a master at that, and we're going to miss him. I'm sorry he quit a little bit early. He told me in later years, he said he felt he should have stuck around a few more years. He kind of got soured on some of the things that were going on behind the scenes and needed to walk away at the time.
Well, I love your passion for radio, and you're still in it, of course, at KCBS. And by the way, you know, Doug Greenwald, Hank's son, he keeps the family legacy going by, you know, calling AAA games in Fresno. So, you know, that's really good. And you know, somebody else who really had a passion for Giants baseball was Peter McGowan, who was the managing general partner. And, of course, he passed away as well. I wanted to ask you about him. I mean, of course, his legacy is going to be AT&T now, Oracle Park, and making sure that that got built. But there was a lot more to him. What did he bring to the table as a Giants owner?
Well, I think he brought the tradition and the appreciation of the club's history, which it wasn't as if Bob Lurie didn't tap into that as well. But I think Bob gave more lip service to it. Bob was hoping that the fans would just show up because he put entertaining teams on the field. You've got to do more than that. And the Giants had such a rich legacy, and I think Peter, realizing that when they moved downtown, let's really capitalize on that. One of the things he did that I thought was kind of neat, just a little thing, was that he told the groundskeepers, I want to have a clean field. In other words, no grids, no cuts in the field. I want it to look just like the baseball fields that I remember as a kid. Because one of the beauties of walking into a ballpark for the first time, if you're a little kid, I'm sure you remember your first time. I remember my first time at Seal Stadium when my dad took me to see a minor league game. I was 5 years old. I don't remember anything about the game. But I remember walking through the portal, and all of a sudden the field opens up, and you see all the guys out on the field playing catch, shagging fly balls. And it's just, you know, you're a little kid, and that green field just stretches out. It's seemingly into infinity, and it's a beautiful thing, and it relaxes you. You almost, I mean, they call it the baseball park for a reason. It's not a stadium, you know. It's not a gridiron. It's a park. I love George Carlin. He always used to say, "There's a picnic kind of an atmosphere when you go to a ballpark." Sometimes there's tension and people get excited, but generally speaking, you know, in football, if you don't feel like killing at least three people, preferably a stranger, before the end of the first quarter, you're not into the game.
Yeah, you know? He's great.
There really is. So I think Peter recognized that. That's one of the things he did. He established a connection where he brought a lot of the older players back, honored them. You know, the statues and the way the field was designed, the way the stadium was designed, or the ballpark, I should say, was designed. You know, they had plenty of time to put that together. They had two other opportunities to have a stadium in downtown San Francisco, and neither one of them came to fruition. So they had put a lot of effort and ideas, and he took some of the best ideas that had been discarded because of earlier defeats on the ballot measure to build a stadium and put them into place. And so they had a lot of time to figure out how to do it right, and I think they did it pretty well. That ballpark is today considered one of the best, if not the best, baseball park in America.
Oh, yeah, it's just a beautiful place, and, you know, we love going there. And to finish up, you mentioned that maybe Hank Greenwald retired maybe, you know, a little early, and I feel that way about Bruce Bochy. I feel that Bruce Bochy still has a number of years left in him. I think he still has the passion for it. I think he still wants to manage, but I think he saw the writing on the wall with the direction the Giants are going, and it's just – it's kind of a shame. I mean, I know the Giants needed to make a change and they want to go in this analytical direction. And he's saying that, yeah, you know, I'm going to work well with this. But I don't think he would be retiring if it was a different situation. I think he's more of the old school manager. What do you sense about why Bochy is retiring? And what have you thought about his career as a Giants manager?
Oh, he's done a wonderful job, obviously. I mean, and look at over the years, you know, his record is actually below 500 because he had some bad teams in San Diego, and he had some bad teams here. He's got a bad team right now. Let's face it, the Giants would be lucky if they could get out of the cellar this year. Maybe he would have hung around for another couple of years. I don't know. You know, 25 years of doing that is a long time, no matter how passionate and how good and how much enthusiasm you have. I think he definitely needed to step away for a year or two. Dusty Baker had a hard time walking away, finally did. He never actually announced his retirement. But Dusty said the best thing for him was he took a year off, I think it was in 2007, and it gave him a chance to regroup and refresh. Maybe that'll happen with Bochy. I think Bochy, you know, it's possible he could come back. I mean, in baseball, it just seems as if the old wise guys, you know, end up managing a little bit longer, although there is a trend in pro sports now today to go with younger people. You know, management is a little less tolerant, and they want people who are more flexible that they can kind of mold rather than the old school, you know, I know what I'm doing kind of a way of thinking. Bochy's very malleable with front office people. I think he gets along very well with Farhan Zaidi, and Zaidi is sensitive enough not to tread on Bruce's shoes, so they've had a kind of a comfortable, you know, pairing, but it's obviously not going to work in the long term. And I think that's one of the reasons why Bochy's leaving. Whether he'd leave, if it was not that way, I don't know. I get the feeling, though, he needs to take some time off. I talked to him the other day after the game, and he seems very much at peace with the whole thing. He's looking forward to doing some traveling, and, you know, he's got a great family and a wife who has been very supportive. So you won't find a better person in baseball than Bruce Bochy in terms of just a good guy, a stand-up guy who's going to, you know, have your back if you're a ball player. I mean, Dusty Baker's another one of those people. The Giants have been lucky to have those kind of people around. Bob Melvin's that way over in Oakland. There are some very good managers we've had here in the Bay Area that understand athletes and understand people, and Bruce Bochy is certainly one of those people.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be missed. All right, Bruce, hey, before I let you go, I was just thinking, when you do your updates at 15 and 45 and you're at the Shark Tank, what if they score a goal in the middle of your update, because it's really loud there at the Shark Tank? I can only imagine you probably can't even hear yourself if you're doing an update.
Well, actually, that it's interesting you bring that up, because we were doing updates at a Warrior game the other night. This is a couple weeks ago. And a big moment in the game, they had like a four or five baskets in a row, and the place was going nuts. And so I kind of broke away from what I was talking about because it was very distracting, all the noise, to explain what was happening without doing play-by-play. And it actually came across pretty well. I have to say that I was able to pull it off. But in those kind of situations, I think that's where you make your mark as a broadcaster. You have to be able to improvise and go with the flow. And again, we're not allowed to do play-by-play, but you can, you know, summarize or at least give them a feeling of what is happening and a word picture. And so that's what we try to do. And let's face it, the people who are listening at that particular time, if they're interested in hockey, they're watching the game, they're at it, or watching it on television. But there are people driving around that just want a quick update. And so, you know, give them a little taste of a little feel of the excitement, and hopefully that's what we can do tonight.
I know you're not down on the ice, thank goodness, because I don't want you to take a puck in the mouth. But if you did, I know you'd keep going and you'd do your update, just like Joe Pavelski scored that goal with a puck off his mouth. That was incredible. Bruce, nobody in baseball would ever continue in a game, even a playoff game, I don't think, if they got hit in the face like that.
Yeah, that was an amazing play. You're talking about Pavelski taking the puck off of Brett Burns' stick and deflecting it into the net. I think the quote after the game was, he said he was more than happy that happened because it sort of set the tone for the game. He came back out. He inspired his teammates. That was a very important goal. It was a tight, taut defensive struggle at the time. The Sharks needed a little something to give him an edge. And he just happened to be in the right place at the right time. It was a strange play. I mean, how many times do you have the guy deflect a puck in off his chin? So, you know, Pavelski, though, is a classic tough guy. And just a great guy to have as your captain. I'm happy for him. University of Wisconsin grad, too. So a pretty good hockey program back there. I went to the University of Denver, and they were our big rivals in college hockey. So I'm happy to see a WCHA guy doing well in the NHL.
All right, and it's too busy, Brandon. It's too bad Brandon Belt is busy with the Giants because they need him to bring the team out every game. They won when he did it, so.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Bruce, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. I'll see you at the ballpark soon.
All right, Joe. Always a pleasure. You take care, buddy.
That's Bruce McGowan from KCBS Radio in San Francisco. Join us again next week for another edition of Inside China Basin. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on thesportsvirus.com.